Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. He's temper all the times, the times I
arrive. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am still just a dude.
Well, it's weird times. We're doing some different stuff these days.
Yeah, if this one sounds a little choppy or strange, it's our first time doing it remotely apart from each other.
That's right. We're doing it socially distanced from each other.
Yeah, you're at your house and I'm at mine.
That's right. I have you propped up on my iPhone on a roll of toilet paper. It's like cash currency these days.
Well, that's true. I heard somebody got their house TP'd and the value of it went up a couple hundred thousand.
They appraised it. So you're sitting there at your house atop Three Last Mountain.
Correct.
And I'm over here at Three Dudes Lake.
Yeah, that's about right.
I figured that was my little riff on where I live.
Yeah, and we came up with this solution to do this, and a lot of times other people Skype. The girls Skype when they do theirs.
Yeah.
But I wasn't so sure if my computer was going to support Skyping and recording at the same time, and we kind of had to see each other, so we're FaceTiming. And we've got headphones plugged into our phones so that you don't get the feedback from the phone speaker talking and get an echo.
Yeah, this is all technologically advanced for us.
Yeah,
we're in person podcasters.
We're in over our heads, but it is good we can see each other. I was going to try to do it just blind over the phone.
Yeah,
and then said, wait a minute, maybe we could FaceTime and that would work better.
Well, that's what the boys do. I guess they do that a lot of times. They don't have any video, I think, right?
Well, I don't think they do. But they've been doing it so long, and they're such professionals. I mean, we can't compare ourselves to them.
No, that's true.
There's no comparison there. So,
well, speaking of the lake, I've been doing a little bit of fishing down at the lake here. I've been terrorizing the bluegills down there and occasional bass.
Well, I have too with my fishing pole and my Animal Crossing place.
Oh, yeah. That's right. You've been playing Animal Crossing with Riley and Mary, right?
Yeah. Yeah, all I do is fish and catch bugs, though. I don't do anything else. They're like, why are you still in a tent? Well, because I'd have no need for anything else. They came in. I hadn't even unpacked my boxes they give you when you first start. They said, open them.
You're socially distancing yourself while you're playing Animal Crossing.
Yeah. And I had Mary convinced that I had gone in one of the other characters' houses and stolen his stuff and put it over in her house to frame her. And she was really upset. You shouldn't do that. They're going to kick me off the island. Riley finally said, Mom, you can't do that. But I had her convinced I'd done it.
I've never played that game before. We were talking about getting it over here, but right now Salem's doing a Zelda Breath of the Wild run through again. So he's monopolizing the Switch. So I don't think I'd have a chance to play it.
Well, Riley had gotten a new one, so she had her old one, so she passed it on to Mary and I to share. So we live on the same island with our own characters. But
I read somewhere that the price of those, that people are buying them and reselling them for like super expensive right now, which is crazy.
Well, I don't know. Unless there's a demand because of this self-isolating, you need something to do.
I think there is that. And also the fact that game just came out too. So
yeah, it did just come out and it's online. So you can go and visit people. You have to give them a friend code or something. And then people can come to your island and visit you. Although I saw a very funny video that someone had posted, a TikTok, I guess you call it. That there was the girl's sister had been coming and visiting her and been wreaking havoc on her island. She like dug a series of holes outside her house, outside the door of her house, so that the girl couldn't get out of her house because they were all holes and you can't walk across holes.
Boxed her in.
Yeah. So that's pretty crazy.
Oh, I think our intro is a little bit longer than usual. I guess we haven't seen each other in a while. We're catching up.
Yeah, that's right. We haven't. It's been almost a quarantine period.
It has. You know, I was looking at West Virginia is pretty isolated, so we have, you know, very few cases here. We just had our first case in Cabell County, last Saturday, I think it was. So I guess sometimes being separated by the hills has its benefits.
Yeah, that one case here in Cabell County is a doctor, and they had got it in their travels, and it just come back like a week before.
Oh, that was a doctor?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even like a local transmission or whatever they call it.
No, picked it up somewhere and traveled back here, but he was back here for about a week before he realized he had it.
Ooh, yeah. I had a little bit of a scare because I had that one attorney friend that tested negative for the flu and all the other stuff, and then they had a positive, or didn't have a positive test yet, but they were presumed positive, awaiting the result because of all the symptoms they had.
Yeah, and that's why we put off recording in our regular time we record, was because of that.
Yeah.
We thought you had been exposed.
Well, possibly exposed, and it's better to be safe than sorry, but 14 days have passed, and I've consulted with a medical expert named Dr. Sidney McElroy, so I should be in the clear.
I've heard of that good doctor.
Yeah. But I'm still isolating as much as I can, though, because that's just safe practice.
You're just isolating to get out of honeydew things.
No, I spent all weekend. I was on the pressure washer all weekend.
Oh.
Giving that fence what for?
Oh, okay. Well, don't give it too much. You might blow it away. First time I used a pressure washer, I ate up all the concrete.
Oh, yeah, you got a little bit too close?
Yeah, I guess so. It was like shearing out a hole in the concrete. I didn't know it could do that. It's just water.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It'll have to cut your toe off, too.
Well, I didn't wash my foot. I just washed my concrete.
I did manage to cut my ankle a little bit, and I did actually power spray out the cut a little bit to clean it off. So
That doesn't sound like a good idea.
Well, I didn't do it from too close of a distance, but... Well, our episode today was an idea sent in by Eric Lynch and Christian Aparta. Well, I guess Eric sent it in, and Christian commented on it as well. But it has to do with the recent pandemic and what is going on and what people are looking at to try to stop the spread of it. And it appears the Department of Justice wants to be able to detain people indefinitely without having a trial or any kind of proceeding in front of a court.
That doesn't sound very American.
I think it can be very problematic.
There's probably groups like the ACLU that would frown on that.
I would think a lot of groups besides the ACLU, including one that I might be a part of, no matter what group it might be, might frown upon that a little bit too.
The LAWYERS.
Yeah. They say justice delayed is justice denied. Remember that quote?
I remember that. That was about that guy down there that was held office in Georgia and was also a lawyer, and he kept getting all the trials put off forever.
That's right. Well, that was where the victims were upset about that.
Right.
Because the victims didn't really have a right to push the case forward. And
right.
He represented the accused.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And he kept putting them off to scam them.
Well, not really scam them, but just to kind of game the system a little bit to make it better for his clients.
He was employing a ruse.
It was just a red herring.
Well, I've caught some red snappers.
I have too.
Mine are on Animal Crossing.
Oh, you can catch red snappers on there?
Yeah.
Oh.
And sea bass? Yeah, I thought that's why you were talking about it. I thought you were talking about playing Animal Crossing too. I didn't realize you were talking about real ones.
No, I was actually really going down to the pond with my fly rod and catching little bluegill and bass.
I was just using my flimsy rod and doing it on Animal Crossing.
There you go. But really, it is problematic if you want to delay people going to trial or hold them indefinitely without having a trial or any kind of hearing in front of a judge. And what the Department of Justice was asking is that they want Congress to pass a new law that would give the chief judge of any district the ability to, quote-unquote, pause court proceedings whenever the district court is fully or partially closed by virtue of any natural disaster, civil disobedience, or other emergency situation.
Now, let me just say this. The intent of the law is one thing. The worry about how it might be put into practice is another.
Absolutely.
Because what you're saying is, right now, you can't have groups all together, so how are you going to have a jury that sit there and listen to the case? You have to spread them out all over the courtroom, and you can't have the public in there, and you know, you've got a real problem with it. So,
right.
You can't have the trial, and if you can't have the trial, then people might get off on a technicality. So you're trying to erase that technicality.
I understand all of that, because you can't have a jury, because just feasibly doesn't make any sense. You're not supposed to have groups of more than 10 people. And really, it's not supposed to be groups of people at all, right. honestly. And the access to the courts is supposed to be public. Everything's supposed to be done in the open.
Yeah.
So it's real problematic how this functions in democracy.
So the essence of it is saying that we need to be able to do this to keep everybody safe, but not, you know, have somebody released on a technicality. But right. the real life problem is, what if somebody used this to their advantage to railroad people?
Absolutely. And this, you know, harkens back. We were talking a little bit before we started recording about the Patriot Act and things like that. It's kind of something that was in response to a crisis that happened, 9/11. But then you end up passing these other kinds of laws and whatnot, which results in different things that you didn't really anticipate or necessarily want.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's some things from the Patriot Act that people are kind of regretting now.
Have you, I always talk about the show a lot, Arrested Development. I don't think you've ever watched it, have you?
I know what you're talking about, and I have watched at it, but I've never really watched the whole series, no.
Well, there's one lawyer in it, and he's a prosecutor, and he keeps, he's prosecuting the Bluth family, and they keep saying, can you do that? And he's like, the Patriot Act, read it. You
know, that's right.
So yeah,
I think I heard him say that on one of the few episodes that I saw.
Well, he said it in several.
Yeah.
It was kind of one of the recurring gags on there. So, but the one thing that popped out to me, and this article mentioned one thing, but the other thing that popped out to me was the right to a speedy trial.
Right.
And we've talked about that before.
Right.
And the speedy trial clause is part of the Sixth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And that reads that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial. And the clause protects the defendant from a delay between the presentation of the indictment or other some other kind of charging instrument and the beginning of the trial. And so that means that you just can't languish in jail awaiting your day in court or your trial.
Right. Because that, in a way, is depriving you of due process.
Exactly. And denying you of justice because it's delayed.
That's right. Justice delayed is justice denied. I heard a very smart man tell me that. I think he was a judge.
Well, you never know. It probably wasn't me. Well, so I think that is a real problem. And there's one, I was doing a little bit of research about the speedy trial clause, and I came across a very interesting case which kind of illustrates a very strange situation I thought you might enjoy and our listeners might enjoy. And that's the case of Doggett v. U.S. Have you ever heard of it?
Have not.
I'm not surprised.
God, Doggett?
I knew there was going to be some joke coming. I was just waiting for it. And this case held, it was a Supreme Court case, and the court held that an 8.5-year delay between Doggett's initial indictment and actual arrest violated his Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial. And they said that the government had been negligent in pursuing him and that he had remained unaware of the indictment until his arrest. So it's kind of a weird situation. Mark Doggett was indicted in February 1980 on charges of conspiring with several others to import and distribute cocaine. 1980. Big cocaine time.
Yep.
Big cocaine time.
Yeah, that was when the CIA first started bringing it in to L.A.
Whoa, easy on the conspiracies there. Douglas Driver with the DEA, he was the agent in the case, and he informed the U.S. Marshals Service that the DEA would oversee the arrest of Doggett and all of the Confederates.
The now, Confederates, later, hadn't they lost the war by then?
They had. Indeed.
Was this 1880 or was this 1980?
Fooled him again, Josie. Fooled him again. So 1 month later, in March of 1980, two police officers traveled to Raleigh, North Carolina, to arrest him at his parents' house. But they learned from his mother that he had actually left for Columbia a few days earlier. When they learned that he had left, they decided they were going to arrest him when he returned. He notified the U.S. Customs stations and several law enforcement agencies, as well as Treasury Enforcement Communication System, the TEX system, which I guess was the system how they had, that he was going to be detained when he returned into the country. But evidently that info expired in September of 1980 and was not reentered. So there's part of the breakdown. So the agent learned in September of 1981, this is a year later, that he had been arrested, that Doggett had been arrested in Panama on drug charges. And he believed that an extradition request would be futile because of the Panamanian drug connections and all that. he merely asked the Panamanian authorities to expel Doggett to the U.S. upon his release, basically saying once he gets out of jail, send him back to the U.S. And they said they would do it, but when he was released, they actually let him travel to Colombia. So now Doggett goes to Colombia. All the while, he presumably does not know, or they have no proof that he knows about the fact that they were looking for him. And the American Embassy in Panama notified the Department of State that Doggett had departed to Colombia, but the DEA never informed or presumed that Doggett was still in Panamanian prison. So Driver didn't learn that he was going to go to Colombia or anything like that, and he presumed that Doggett had settled in Colombia and was never coming back to the U.S. And he never tried to extradite him or anything like that because he believed it would be futile. But here's the weird thing. Doggett didn't go to Colombia. He returned to the U.S. in September of 1982 and went through customs and came to New York City. And so he came back to the U.S. So the information that they had that he was going to Colombia was false. It was wrong.
Maybe it was Columbia, South Carolina.
Maybe so. And so he comes back after spending some time in a Panamanian prison. Prison had set him straight. He did not go back to the drug trade. He settled down in Virginia, married, earned a college degree, had a steady job, lived openly under his own name, and did not run afoul of the law or anything along those lines. He was basically just your average citizen.
When he came back from Colombia, was he wearing one of them hats? Or from Panama?
A Panama jack hat?
Yeah.
Maybe so. Maybe that's why they didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
So they never told him about the indictment. He never knew about it. And in September of 1988, 8 years after he was indicted, Marshals Service ran a credit check on several thousand people to they find out where Doggett was living. And they finally arrested him on September 5th of that year, 8.5 years after his indictment and 6.5 years after his return to the U.S. So, you know, he basically came back, had no idea that he had been indicted. The government really hadn't done anything to try to find him. They never notified him of it. And he was living openly in the U.S. So he moved to have the indictment dismissed on speedy trial grounds. And the federal magistrate looked at it and said, no, you know, I don't think that you were prejudiced in any way. And that's one of the factors they look at. Were you materially prejudiced by not having the case brought?
Well, and also it wasn't like they were holding him in prison. If they'd been holding him in prison, that'd have been something else. But they weren't holding him in prison.
Well, no, they weren't. But, you know, all of his possible witnesses and anybody he might have had during that period when the government didn't really try to prosecute his case, that materially could prejudice him, I think.
Well, they were all criminals anyway. You weren't going to listen to any of his witnesses.
So the trial court allowed him to enter a plea of guilty, but they reserved the right for him to appeal the speedy trial claim, which happens sometimes. Whenever somebody thinks they have a good appellate right, they'll go ahead and enter a plea based upon just moving it along because they think they have one real good issue. And the 11th Circuit in 1990 agreed with the trial court that Doggett had not shown any actual prejudice and attributed the government's actions to negligence rather than bad faith and concluded that the factors did not weigh so heavily against the government as to make specific prejudice unnecessary. The dissent argued that the majority had placed too much emphasis on Doggett's inability to prove actual prejudice. So that was kind of a bit of a split there amongst the intermediate appellate. So they petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court heard it in 1991, and in a 5-4 decision, they ruled in Doggett's favor and found that he actually had been prejudiced by that. And Justice Souter wrote the opinion of the court, and Souter noted that the question before the court was whether or not 8.5 years between the plaintiff's indictment and arrest violated his Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial. Citing several previous Supreme Court cases, Justice Souter noted the Supreme Court observed in prior cases that an unreasonable delay between a formal accusation and trial threatens to produce more than one sort of harm, including oppressive pretrial incarceration, anxiety and concern on the accused, and the possibility that the accused's defense will be impaired, in citing the other cases. Interestingly enough, Sandra Day O'Connor was the dissent, and she said that Doggett's liberty was never inhibited between his indictment and arrest, which is what you said. He wasn't in trial or wasn't incarcerated.
And he didn't have to worry about it because he didn't even know he was indicted.
Yeah. And they felt that he didn't suffer any anxiety restriction. So,
yeah.
But, you know, this is something that kind of cuts the other way. You're talking about the Patriot Act and this when, well, there might be unintended ramifications of doing this. Well, likewise, if you don't say that the government needs to go ahead and push this case forward, then there could be unintended ramifications of that on the other side. Because if you don't hold that 8.5 years is too long, then there is possibility for abuse on the government side.
Well, that's true. But you know, what if he had stayed in Colombia for those 8 years and then came back and then they arrested him? Could he still say the same thing?
I think his case gets much, much weaker then. The fact that he came back to the U.S., was living openly, wasn't trying to conceal himself or do anything like that, I think that is one of the real main issues in this case.
Yeah, but somebody still had to be looking for him, and maybe they had more important things to do right then. You know, there was a lot of discos going on there, and, you know, they Studio 54 and stuff like that they had to get to. This was the 80s, dude.
He was in Virginia at that point. They didn't have Studio 54 in Virginia.
Well, the marshals that would have been looking for him, they might have had other bigger fish to fry. They had to catch the CIA distributing on all that coke in the L.A. streets and all that kind of stuff, you know.
They had bigger red herrings than Animal Crossing to find.
That's right. I don't agree with that. That doesn't seem right. I mean, it's hard to keep up. It's hard to keep up with all the criminals.
So, well, I thought it was kind of an interesting case, though, because of the strange circumstances of it. And it's one of those ones that it tends to illustrate very strange situations. So,
yeah. And like I said, this is being asked for with the right intentions so that you can delay court cases without people walking free. But at the same time, it's ripe for abuse.
Absolutely.
In addition to that, they were also asking to suspend statute of limitations for arrests. And because they're saying that they may have to not be able to bring people in because of this, and they don't want to lose somebody because statute of limitations because of COVID-19 restrictions that they weren't able to get them. But for some reason, they throw in there as well, and that migrants cannot apply for asylum if they have COVID-19. So now they're getting a little carried away. I mean, throwing all that into one big law, that's one of those things, you know, where they roll in some of these little pet project things along with something that's necessary.
Yeah.
That sounds like that.
Without getting too political, the whole relief thing kind of bothered me a little bit about that, too. sticking things in. And it was, you know, cuts both ways, both sides, trying to put stuff into the different bills.
Well, it did say that both Republicans and Democrats did not like the idea of these requests.
Yeah. Now, the other issue that this Department of Justice thing might bring up is one of our old friends. Do you know what that is?
Do we cheat them and how?
Habeas corpus.
Habeas corpus.
Yes.
That's that Latin dead guy.
We've talked about that before. It literally translates as that you have the body.
Bring me the body. Show me the money.
And we've talked about this before in different episodes, but habeas corpus is something in law which allows somebody to petition the court believing that they're being unlawfully detained or imprisoned. And it gives the person the ability to come to court, and the court can determine whether or not the detention is lawful or not. Now, the problem I see with this Department of Justice thing is that they can hold somebody indefinitely, even before they are potentially charged, the way this would play out,
mm-hmm.
as that article said.
Right.
And, you know, that there's some real problems with that. It's super ripe for abuse, because, you know, the Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial, that's once the court proceedings already started, once a person's been indicted, and, you know, it's kind of moving along those train tracks. But honestly, if you're suspending the fact that of all these different rules and whatnot before pretrial and before indictment, you're never even getting on the train track. You're still sitting in the train yard there waiting for the train master to load them up.
Well, yeah, it's like your clock hadn't even started running yet, but you're still sitting in there.
I was trying to use some train jargon there for you.
You're still in the roundhouse. They haven't even fired up your coal burner yet.
Good enough. Now, habeas corpus is guaranteed in the suspension clause of the United States Constitution, and it's actually, it came from English common law, like we've discussed before, and it states that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. So that brings up an interesting thing. it's guaranteed in the Constitution that it can't be suspended, correct?
Right.
Well, the exceptions are in cases of rebellion, which it was suspended during the Civil War.
Right.
Historically.
Yes.
But could you say that this COVID-19 is some sort of invasion that public safety requires it?
Well, you could.
Is that a possibility of it?
Yeah, it is an invasion.
I mean, I doubt that
it's an intrusion.
I doubt invasion is actually defined anywhere in the Constitution. Usually whenever you have a term like that, you have to go back to the code or whatnot to look for definitions. And usually the definitions, this is a little pro tip here. Usually the definition section of whatever you're looking for is in the very first, like, you know, section one, definitions.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What is an invasion into our American way of life?
Yeah. I mean, it could be. Absolutely. And the other thing, too, is that the courts have historically held that habeas corpus rights are very broad. If you remember in the case of the Guantanamo detainees, the Supreme Court even found that a possible enemy combatant in Guantanamo has the right to a habeas corpus proceeding. So if you are a U.S. citizen, I would say almost under any circumstance, you probably have the right to bring that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty much guaranteed.
Yeah. And so there's no provisions for social distancing in the Constitution. They didn't foresee that.
No, they did not. So the whole thing that that article brought up had a lot of different interesting circumstances and different ways it might play out that could be problematic. So
yeah, I was thinking about that, is that they can't hold trials right now. And
yeah,
because of the problems with putting people in the same room and everything. So, you know, you can't do that. You're exposing too many people to danger.
Well, right now, in West Virginia, our Supreme Court has issued a mandate that only emergency hearings can take place between now and April 10th. And those hearings themselves are pretty much occurring by phone. And that's just the way it's happening. I have a hearing tomorrow that's occurring by phone, and I have one on Friday that's occurring by phone. They're just emergency hearings that have to take place, but we're not doing them in person.
Hmm. Well, what constitutes an emergency hearing?
These are generally, with regard to children.
Oh, okay.
And, situations like that.
So
like
they can't just sit and wait.
Yeah. I mean, there are very strict 10-day requirements for certain things that have to be heard. These have to do with, parental rights of, people and whatnot. So it's very important to have this heard pretty timely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the other one that has to usually be heard again is the, preliminary hearing in cases that are felonies and whatnot. Those have to be heard within 10 days as well in magistrate court. So I believe they're continuing along with those to make sure people are getting their preliminary hearing. And, you know, a lot of times they're releasing people on PR bonds right now rather than holding them, assuming they're nonviolent. Just because this is not a time when we want to have our prisons full of people because of the spread of it. We want people not being congregated like that.
On so public relations bonds?
Yeah. There's not much social distancing in jails and prisons.
No, they're not. They're pretty much crammed in there.
Yeah.
So if one gets it, they're all going to get it.
Yeah. That's the scary thing about that.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything about that. I've heard that as a worry, but I haven't heard it as it happening.
Well, they're not allowing any visitors. There's no in-person visits or anything like that.
Right.
Now, as an attorney, I'm allowed to go see a client in jail.
But you don't come in proximity to him necessarily. I mean,
well,
you can, but they can keep you apart from him right now.
Yeah, these are pretty much, I have not been to the jail to see anybody since this has been going on. A couple of my friends have, and they've been no contact, meaning there's like a glass wall between
right.
them.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Which generally, when I meet with clients, it's not a no contact setting. Usually I'm just sitting in a room with them. We're just talking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those have pretty much been suspended right now, because they don't want to introduce anything from the outside world into the jail or prison.
Yeah,
because
it would spread rapidly.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, mm-hmm. You know, you were talking, one interesting thing is about social distancing and people being infected and having to vote in Congress.
Yeah, well,
it
was kind of funny that some of the senators and congressmen were complaining that in these days of, you know, having to social distance and you've got people in quarantine, that they haven't developed a way to vote remotely. Well, the reason they haven't is because of the Constitution. it requires you to be there. Article 1, Section 5, it talks about a quorum, and there's no provisions for any other place to vote except on the floor of the House or the Senate.
Yeah, and I kind of understand where that came from. It's probably because they didn't want people like sending letters in saying, oh, here's how I'm going to vote on this issue, you know, back in the days of old when letters were sent.
Yeah, of course, they had no way of foreseeing what could take place now or whatever, but...
They didn't know that you and I would be FaceTiming recording a podcast
that's
on
right.
iPhones.
Yeah, so you had to be there. That was the only way, and it was even... The way that it says is that when they take a vote, it's a voice vote, either yay or nay. And if it's obvious, then that should be the end of it. But if it's not obvious, then they have to take a roll call vote. Now, it used to be the only way to do a roll call vote is to go through and call everybody's name, and they say yay or nay, and they mark them all down. Now, it wasn't that long ago, they put in an electronic voting system where they can push a button and everybody votes so it doesn't take so long, you know, especially in the House when you got 435 members. So you can find that out a lot quicker. But that is an in-house system that is not connected to the internet in any way. It just strictly, that's all it's there for is that. And it's completely self-contained. So they're saying, you know, that doesn't violate anything. But they don't have anything where you could vote from, you know, like Senator Rand is being quarantined because he tested positive. He can't vote from his house. He can't call in or teleconference or FaceTime like we're doing or anything like that. There's no provisions for that. He has to be on the floor. Now, the only thing they've come up with that they think they can get approved is a proxy, that a person could give their proxy to someone that's going to be there on how to vote on different issues.
Right.
So that's the only thing that they found to do it, which doesn't really serve as remote. And, you know, think about the last election in 2016, and they found the Russians meddling in that. Do we want our votes in the House or Senate being subject to something like that so that they can vote from their house or something?
Yeah, well, it's definitely not going to be a perfect system because the people have voted for a certain person, not that proxy.
Right.
And who's going to say that proxy is going to do what the actual person wants them to do?
Well, they should. There'd probably be a signed document involved or something, I would think. But I don't know. I would. It's probably one of those things where you would assume if I gave my proxy to somebody, it'd be somebody I'd feel pretty good about was going to do what I asked them. But you never know. If pressured wrist right, somebody might turn on you or something. You don't know.
Yeah, the proxy's just tiptoeing down their primrose path to Congress there to go place their vote, and all of a sudden a lobbyist pops out and says, Hey there, Mr. Proxy.
I've got this money burning a hole in my pocket.
Money? Money sounds pretty good. I like money.
But
I don't know what voice that was it turned into.
But they are looking into it, but they asked a couple of people about it, and one of the congressmen said a guy named McGovern, he's a Democrat from Massachusetts, he said there's some merit to the idea, but it's more complicated than going to a laptop and pressing a button. He said first there would be technical challenges, and we have some members that still have flip phones. Not every member is not every member is up to the same level as the most advanced members in terms of technology. How do you do points of order? How do you deal with issues of changing your vote? We have to think these things through. And the other part about it is debate. The whole spirit of our Congress and everything is the spirit of debate. If you're not there, you can't ask questions and you can't participate in debates about bills, you know?
Yeah.
So it's more than just phoning in a vote, I guess is what I'm saying. There's a lot more involved to it.
If my argument as to why I could not do something was because I still have a flip phone, I don't think I should be running for office at that point. I think
he evidently must have known some of them because he called them out.
I mean, really, America? We're still voting for people with flip phones?
I mean, I've even got an iPhone. I don't do anything but make phone calls or texts. Or look at Facebook, but I still have one. I could go to the internet, I guess, if I wanted to.
You don't use the internet on your phone?
No, I always have Mary Google it up. Or Riley, if she's there. Riley's better at it. The other day, somebody from Morgantown.
I'm just laughing with you.
Somebody from Morgantown called and wanted an estimate on a job, and I didn't want to drive to Morgantown 3 hours so I could be there 15 minutes and give them an estimate. I said, could you take a video of it and send me the video? Oh, okay. So they took a video and they sent it to me. They texted it to me and I'm looking at it. It came in, it was real small. And I kept poking it and touching other things and trying to make it bigger. But the only thing it kept doing, do you want to delete? No, hell no, I don't want to delete. So I kept poking and trying to get it. I couldn't get it. I thought, I need me a Gen Zer. They can figure this thing out. So I got a young guy working in the scan room. So I went and I said, here, make this picture big so I can see it. And he poked around at a couple of minutes, and there it was. Or a couple of minutes, a couple of seconds. And there it was. Yeah. He brought it up big. I couldn't do it. And I'd been in there fooling with it for 15 minutes.
Now, I will go ahead and tell you that watching a video on a iMessage that somebody sent you and trying to make it bigger and also trying to make it play,
that can even
haunt the best of us.
Oh,
so that's happened to me before. So don't get too caught up on that. That's okay.
It was little bitty. It was like the size of a penny, and I couldn't see the files that I was trying to estimate, so I had to get him to make it bigger. And I knew if I found a young guy, I could get. I didn't even go to the IT guy. The IT guy is almost my age, so I went to the young guy that's in the scan room. I knew he would be able to do it.
The size of a penny? You're dating yourself. These kids don't even know what pennies are these days.
Hey, they talk about doing away with those at some point.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
But anyway,
they
talked about wanting to change it. But one of the problems they're having right now is they can't even vote on a constitutional change because they got too many of them that can't be there. And they're trying to practice social distancing. So they've spread out their desk and they've told them they have to stand so far apart while they're in there. And so it's a real mess.
I read somewhere that Rand Paul had been exposed at something or some point or something like that. And continue to go see his neighbor, went to the gym and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that I don't understand in social distancing. How about social responsibility? Is that he either was told he was exposed to somebody that had it, or he had symptoms because he went to get a test. But while he was waiting for that test to come back, however many days, he went ahead and just went about his life. And he went to the Senate pool and swam at the Senate pool that morning before he got his result back that afternoon. So there was a lot of people there that was fresh in their mind that he had just been there at the pool swimming with them. And then he got his positive test back. And they're like, well, when did you get this done? Oh, a couple days ago.
Yep.
That part of that, if you get tested, stay inside by yourself until you find out the results. Maybe nobody ever told him that, and he couldn't think that through.
Oh, I guarantee someone told him that, but his head was too big to let it soak in.
I guess so, but there's several members of the House and the Senate that are now quarantined because either they've been exposed or they have tested for it themselves. Amy Klobuchar that was running for president, her husband has it.
You know, it was interesting. I was watching some article that somebody posted. It was on Reddit, and it was actually an Australian 60 Minutes. I didn't realize that Australia had their own 60 Minutes, but I guess they do. And they were interviewing some scientist who studies pandemics and whatnot, and she was actually quarantined in New York, so they were doing it from her apartment. And she was one of the consultants on the movie Contagion.
Yeah.
And they asked her, how is this different than Contagion? And she said, well, in Contagion, the government actually steps up and becomes the hero and saves the day. We just didn't realize that was going to be a problem, that we have an inept government that's not able to take care of us during this time.
Oh.
And I swear I kind of feel that way. Like who are these clowns? These guys walk around with their flip phones.
Yeah. I went back and watched that movie too. I wanted to see how much of it was like what we're experiencing.
Yeah. Not me. I've been watching Tiger King.
Oh, I watched that too. Joe Exotic. Now there's your case, but we got to do the story about the what's her name that killed her husband and fed him to the tiger, supposedly.
Carol Baskin.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know that she worked? She's lived in West Virginia and she worked for Governor Rockefeller.
No, I did not.
Yes, she did.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, but I think Tiger King's probably a whole nother episode in and of itself.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I think that's going to bring us to
legal brief. Well, we weren't too far off.
I wonder if that'll link up.
Well, I'll have to make it.
It's a brave new world, Tommy. It's a brave new world.
It's, so, instead of it being constantly ups and downs on the line, there's ups and downs, then there's long blanks. Then there's ups and downs, and there's long blanks. And I got to make all those pieces fit together.
Oh, you're a good man, Charlie Brown. So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I asked Tommy different legal issues we talked about and see if he can remember what they were. So we talked about the Sixth Amendment in particular. Do you remember what is contained in the Sixth Amendment that we talked about?
Right to a speedy trial.
That's right. That's a check
plus. And due process.
Yep. Well, due process is contained in several different places, but the Sixth Amendment Speedy Trial Clause says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial. So that's one thing that if you start detaining people and not giving them their day in court, there's going to be some real issues. That's all we'll say about that.
Well, all right.
And what does habeas corpus mean?
Habeas corpus means give me the body. Hand over the body or something.
What is a habeas corpus proceeding?
Well, that means that you want to bring somebody in. You want to have a trial.
That means a person is challenging the fact that they're being detained. They feel like they're being detained unlawfully.
And so they want a trial as to whether they can continue to be detained or they have to let them go.
Correct. So hearkening back to our previous episode about Typhoid Mary, you know, she could have brought a habeas corpus proceeding where she was being held in that hospital by the government.
Well, they just deemed her insane and put her in there.
Yeah.
Or insane too, or mentally incompetent, something along those lines. They've several examples through history, just like those camp girls we talked about on the last episode, they rounded them up and put them in prison. They said some of them, they held them the whole time of the war and even a couple years after.
Now, in West Virginia, for a mental hygiene, and that's what they call whenever somebody has some sort of mental issue going on, they can make a determination that somebody's going to be a harm to themselves or to others and hold them for a short period while they're being evaluated. So in theory, I guess you could file mental hygiene on somebody who is knowingly infected and still not quarantining themselves and going out. And you could say, well, they're trying to intentionally harm someone else, so they're a threat to others, so we can hold them for a period of observation under a mental hygiene, possibly. Well, so that might be one way around it.
Apparently in Maine, they have their own way of dealing with that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They've been talking about the scare of the people that are fleeing New York because of the outbreak there and how rampant it's become in New York. So all those people are fleeing New York, and they're taking the infection with them to other locations. As a guy like Florida. Florida's trying to keep people from New York out of there. Well, apparently, these guys pulled up in Maine with their New York license plate and went in a house that they had rented there, and the rest of the people were like, we don't want them coming in here from New York and infecting us. We don't want them running around doing that. So they chopped a tree down and dropped it across the driveway, trapping the car in so that the people couldn't get in their car and leave. They'd be stuck there in the house where that's the only place they'd be safe from them. So,
are you sure that was Maine and not Logan County?
Well, it sounds like Logan County, but I believe it was Maine if I remember the article right.
I think it was. I think I read that same article.
Well, it was hilarious. They dropped a tree there to keep them from leaving. By God, we'll quarantine you.
We'll quarantine the hell out of you.
That's right. Next time, we'll put the tree on top of the car with you in it.
Yeah, that was just a warning shot.
I thought the people from Maine were like genteel type people, but apparently they don't mess around.
No, I mean, I think they're probably up there wearing their L.L. Bean duck boots and chainsaws. You got to watch out for them.
I guess so.
I think there's rednecks everywhere.
Hey, well, that's probably true.
Well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs. You got a 2 out of 2. We're gonna make it an easy one today.
Well, that's kind of. I kind of limped through habeas corpus. I knew what it meant, but I wasn't sure exactly how you used it.
Yeah. Bring me the beer. Is that what it means?
No, the body. That was what body. I think that was what Dr. Frankenstein told Igor so that he could get to work there. And he had him robbing the grave. He issued him a habeas corpus to bring him a habitual corpse.
He went to get the brain. He got the AB normal brain.
Yeah. He said, get me a normal one. Here's one AB normal.
I'm going to have to watch Young Frankenstein. I haven't seen that movie in forever.
It's been a long time.
Yeah. I think you were the one that first showed that movie to me when I was younger.
Probably so. That seems like about the right time period.
the right time period where you started corrupting my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, there were several Mel Brooks movies that were popular then.
Well, I hope everybody stays safe out there and practices good social distancing and doesn't get sick.
And maybe this thing will pass soon. Maybe they've got some clinical trials that they've okayed, that chloroquine or whatever it is that they are now saying that they can use it. The FDA approved use for this, for the serious symptoms of this. So,
yeah.
You know, even if they don't have the vaccine yet, if they can keep it from getting in the lungs, then everybody should be all right.
That's right. But in the meantime, everybody stay safe, and we're thinking about you all here in West Virginia, the top three last mountain and three dudes lake.
That's right. But don't come to visit. We're thinking about you, but no. But we don't want you here.
we're thinking about you, but don't come see
we're,
me.
We're thinking, don't come visit.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is COVID-19. I mean, how can it not be? That's all you see and hear about, 24/7. But before I start on this random thought, let me preface it with a warning. I am not a very smart man. I am probably somewhere between Gilligan and Steve-O, except I had enough sense not to put a tattoo of my face on my back. So don't let me influence anything you are currently doing. But don't panic. That said, I feel like the constant bombardment of reports on this virus and the economic impact of all these businesses being shut down is more harmful and may bring about more deaths than the pandemic itself. I am not disagreeing with anything we are being told as being accurate, but what I do say is that we are not getting the full story. So don't panic. For instance, I feel like for every case that is a reported new case, there is another one that already exists that will go undiscovered. A large portion of this virus goes through people and they never know it, unless they went and got tested. But they are telling you to not waste a test unless you have the most severe symptoms. So people with no symptoms or mild symptoms are not being discovered. That means there could be more people out there that have had it already than those still to get it. The numbers are climbing because the testing is increasing, not because the virus is spreading at a greater rate. So don't panic. A lady on the news last night was complaining that she had been tested 9 days ago and still didn't have her results. She and her husband were isolating, but she said she was worried she could just die at any minute. It doesn't work like that. From seeing her on TV, she had no symptoms now, but said she had a cough and a headache 1 day, 9 days ago. So she went to get tested. Well, 9 days later and you're feeling fine. Like I said, I'm no genius, but I think you're going to pull through, lady. Also, don't go back for another test. It's a waste. Don't panic. While no percentage of death rate is acceptable, if we factored in all of the undiscovered cases, which would at least double the number of confirmed ones, the death rate would be no more than a half of 1%. Of course, no one wants to be that half percent, so I'm not being flippant. But what I want you to remember is the odds are in your favor by an extremely large margin should you happen to get it. So don't panic. Just because I wanted to compare things in movie life to real life, I went back and watched the movie Contagion. Now that was scary stuff. It had a higher infection factor and caused death like in 3 days. That is one where I would say everything being done is necessary. But even then, and I don't know if it was for saving time because of course a movie can only cover so much, but it never mentioned shutting down businesses to stem the disease. It did mention public groups and it used the term social distancing. I am worried that the economic impact will cause far more depression and suicides than the death rate of the virus itself. We may see a continued negative effect for years after the virus no longer exists as a threat. People may lose businesses and their homes because I firmly believe that most of America lives one or two paychecks from financial collapse. So to the governors, I say, don't panic. Clinical trials are being done live in New York right now to treat those with the most severe cases. I feel that if a drug proves capable of defeating the worst symptom, then it won't matter if we catch this virus or not. The vaccine, we are told, is a year away, and the vaccine doesn't help you once you get the disease. However, if the respiratory aspect can be neutralized, then the virus itself will not be something to be feared. So while I won't say that one day we will look back on this and laugh, we will remember where we were when COVID-19 struck and the world literally stood still. Hopefully, we will have learned a lot from that, and maybe some of the good that has arisen from a lot of people will continue, even after there is nothing more to fear. So until then, I say, don't panic. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.